Let me give you some quick Christian pickup lines. We're in this series called Relationship Status. We've been talking about single, talking about looking, dating. We're going to talk about married and parenting. So let me give you some good Christian pickup lines. These have been tested and proven to work. I'm serious about this. Okay, here's the first one. Now, I know why Solomon had 700 wives, because he had never met you. See, did you think that worked? I think that worked. No? No, okay. He's saying that behind you, he's saying yes. Okay, all right, okay. How about this? Girl, you are just like water, but Jesus turned you into fine. So here's the question. How many times do I need to walk around you to get you to fall for me? Jericho, right? Come on, Jericho, walls of Jericho, right. All right. You know how the word says you're to think on things that are pure and lovely and excellent? Well, I've been thinking about you all day long. That'll work on your wife right there, guys. You're right. Write that down, Chris. Write that down. I'm going to use that later today. She's not in the room. Okay. Good. Now I really can use it later today. No. So in my devotion time, I was reading the book of Numbers, and I had this revelation. I don't have yours. Ooh, yeah, yeah. Is your name Grace? Because you are amazing. Oh, it's not. It must be faith, because you are the substance of things I've been hoping for. Come on, what that? All right. Slow down. I really believe the Lord has called you. Can I call you too? I would say God bless you, but it's obviously he already has. And I think we need an altar call for repentance this morning, because you have stolen my heart. Mm. All right, well, we are in this series called Relationship Status. And we're talking about the different relationship statuses that we go through. And you know, it can be challenging in this day of swipe left or right and social media and all that's going on how do you find the right person? You know, how do you know when you should take the next step? And so it becomes very difficult. And as a pastor, as a church, we want to help people navigate these difficult waters, the times that we live in. We also want to help parents help their children navigate these difficult waters also. And then also we come in contact, we're in contact with people who are maybe looking or dating or thinking about it. And you know, maybe they're looking for some wise counsel. So this is good for all of us to think about. So whether you're single, you know, looking, dating, engaged, married, or single again, there's something in this series for all of us. So today, obviously, we're talking about dating. And so I wanted to give you some tips for, you know, some Christian pickup lines if you want to use those. But here's the thing. We live in this sex-saturated society. And it tainted pretty much everything that's out there. And it's impacted the way we date. And it's caused problems with the way we date. And you know, we can't even turn on TV, really, and watch a situational sitcom without just being bombarded with stuff. You know, sex and pornography and all kinds of innuendos and things being said or insinuated. And so it has left a distorted view of love. And so I want to go through that first and talk how it's distorted. And so this is the legacy of a distorted view of love. And what's happened to us because of the way our culture views sex and views love, we have these misunderstandings, and we find ourselves in relationships where we have intimacy without commitment. That's what our culture is selling us, intimacy without commitment. And that's a distortion of the way God has designed the process to work. And also the way dating typically happens in our country is it skips the friendship stage of the relationship. And this is so important to have this early friendship time where you're just getting to know each other. Because when you move too fast physically, become romantically involved, it short circuits that friendship part. And you don't really get to know the person the way you should before you go on to other steps. So this becomes an important skipped process here, the friendship. And then it makes physical relationship, it mistakes a physical relationship for love. And that's another thing that hurts us in this process. We tend to equate sex and love as the same thing. And we hear expressions of that all the time, but sex and love are not the same thing. Sex is an expression of love and should be done in a certain context. If love and sex were the same thing, then what does that make rape? It's not the same thing. And we have songs and a culture that teaches us this kind of stuff. Like, you know, you've lost that loving feeling, right? We all have heard that song before. And it's almost like as Americans, we're in love with being in love is what it, you know, comes down to. And how about this one? An old song, but probably very familiar. Hello, I love you. Won't you tell me your name? Now, how can you love somebody that you don't even know their name? Right? So, but these are the messages that our culture sends us, that often mistaking physical relationship for love. And then the next one here, dating often isolates a couple from important relationships, other vital relationships. And so we've seen it all happen. You had a friend, you know, started dating this girl, then all of a sudden, like, they ditch all their friends on both sides and just kind of go AWOL, and then they're not part of any of their friend groups. And so that also is a problem. So there's need to stay connected, and we'll talk about that as we go on. And then dating in many cases distracts us from our primary job, which is to, especially as a young person, to focus on our future, preparing for our future and what God has for us. So it can also be a distraction. So these are all kind of the legacy of a distorted view of love that has kind of crept into our culture and tends to permeate our dating relationships. Now, here's the thing. When it comes to Christianity, I love what C.S. Lewis said about it. He said, if you want a religion to make you feel really comfortable, he goes, I don't recommend Christianity. And that's the thing. It's not about being comfortable. It's about forsaking our way of wanting to do things, or forsaking the world's way of doing things and embracing Jesus's way, embracing God's way. And so I love this. We need to remember this. Following Jesus isn't about us being comfortable. And many times he calls us out of our comfort zones to live differently than the world. And so we see that when we read the scriptures, it's easy to be offended by what God is calling us to do, to live to a higher standard than the world. Like, for example, Hebrews chapter 13, verse 4. He says, marriage should be honored by all, and the marriage bed kept pure, for God will judge the adulterer and all the sexually immoral. So here's the thing, that God has the guidelines and the rules for relationships, and especially for marriage. And he has reasons for that, because it protects us and it helps us have these healthy relationships. But you can already see in this verse here that it does come across offensive to really everybody in this room. Because if you think about it, if you have a same-sex attraction and he talks about marriage being honored, that the only appropriate relationships between a man and a woman in the context of marriage when it comes to sex, then that's offensive. Or if you're single, that also is offensive. Then you say, well, I've got to wait till I finally get married to enter into that kind of relationship, be romantically involved and physically connected in that way. Or even to married couples. You say, well, I'm married, but yeah, I can have sex with my spouse. But you mean I could only have sex with her for the rest of my life and nobody else? So really, this becomes offensive to anybody and everybody. And so the Bible is like that. God's standards are like that. And that's why C.S. Lewis wrote this. He said, if you're looking for a religion to make you comfortable, Christianity's not it. But we follow Jesus not because he makes us comfortable, because it's the truth, because it's the right way. It's the way that leads to salvation. And doing it his way always makes our life better in the long run. And there are difficult times in following Jesus, but following Jesus through the difficult times, again, always leads to our life being better in the long run. And so you can see that it's not about being comfortable. And then Jesus even raised the bar, right? In Matthew chapter 5, verse 27, 28, a very well-known verse, he said, you've heard that it was said, do not commit adultery. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So he even raised the standard. He says, not just about what you do, it's also about what you think. And so Jesus raised the bar really high. And that's why Paul wrote in Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, he says, therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in the view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. And we know the problem with a living sacrifice is a living sacrifice can stand up and walk off the altar. A dead sacrifice doesn't go anywhere. But as a living sacrifice, it takes us effort to remain and live that kind of life, a living sacrifice that is holy and pleasing to God. And then he goes on and he says this. He says, this is your true and proper worship. He goes, living this kind of lifestyle is part of our worship to God. And he says in verse 2, he says, do not be conformed to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. that this lifestyle only comes about by following him and by renewing our mind on his word. So let's go back to Hebrews chapter 13, verse 4, and just look at a few more words in this verse. He says, marriage should be honored by all. What does that mean, that marriage should be honored by all? Because our society doesn't honor marriage. In fact, this verse says it should be honored by all, not just those who are married, but those who are single, those who are engaged, those that are married, those that are single again, should be honored by all. What does that mean? I think it means to look at marriage from God's view. How does God view marriage? What is it meant for? Why do we have marriage? And know that he designed it, he knows how it works, and we should follow his guidelines and his rules for marriage. But he doesn't stop there. He talks about keeping the marriage bed pure. How do we keep that pure? Well, by living out God's standard for marriage and for sexuality and for relationships. We follow his standard. What are God's standard? And then we look at the scriptures, and this verse is one of them, and there's others, and say, okay, here's God's standard. I'm not going to live according to how I feel. I'm not going to live in close relationships based upon what our culture teaches, but I'm going to live these close relationships based upon God's word and make that my standard for living. And I think that's part of what this verse means. In Psalm 119, verse 9, he says, how can a young man keep his way pure? By living according to your word. That's how we do it. We live according to his word. In Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, Paul talked about this. He said, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if there's anything excellent or praiseworthy. He said, think about these things. Talk about it. He's talking about managing our minds and being careful about what we think about. And then the last part of this verse, Hebrews chapter 13, verse 4, he talks about, for God will judge the adulterer and the sexually immoral. And he talks about taking sexual sin seriously. You know, this world doesn't take it seriously, but we should as followers of Jesus. In fact, Paul, in writing Thessalonians, he talked about what God's will for our life is. And in chapter 4, verse 3 through 5, he says, it is God's will. So he's telling us right away what God's will is. That you should be sanctified. Okay, how does that happen? How does that work? What's that look like? That you should avoid sexual immorality. That each of you should learn to control his own body in a way that is holy and honorable, not in passionate lust like the heathen do who do not know God. So God's will is that we would be sanctified, right? And that we would avoid sexual immorality. It'd be sex outside of marriage is part of that. And so this is God's will for our lives, that we would live differently than the world. Well, how do you do that? Let me give you just a few quick steps. Go to my next verse here. We see in Timothy, 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 22, he says, flee also youthful lusts. He says, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. So he really gives us three steps for living a sanctified life or a holy life, a pure life before God. The first one is we run away from sin. He says, oh, flee also youthful lust. He says, run away from sin. When we see opportunities or situations, tempting situations, we run away from them. Just like Joseph, when he was being tempted, he ran away. And so we run. If you don't want to get stung by bees, then you stay away from where the bees are. But then you do something else. He says, pursue. Pursue righteousness. Pursue faith. Pursue love. Pursue peace. And he's talking here about running to God. We run away from sin. We run away from temptation, but we run to God. And then he says, with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. We run with other believers. We don't do it by ourselves, but we run with others who are running in the same direction. This is God's process for helping us live differently than the world, that we run away from sin, that we constantly run to God, and we run with others who are running in the same direction. Now, I've noticed as I've been walking for the last several years and doing some running over the last year, that many times I run alone. And when I run alone, sometimes, honestly, I just want to quit running. And I find that when I run with other people, that encourages me to run and to run faster. And so there's something about when we run with others. And that's part of what we do as a church, as a community, is we're hopefully running in the same direction. We're running away from sin. We're running to God, and we're running with others. It gives us strength and encouragement to keep going. And so that's how we take action. So we just looked at a few verses, and if we looked at kind of the whole of Scripture, what it teaches us about relationships, we can kind of come up with what I think are some good guidelines for dating relationships. And so I'll give those to you. If you go to my next slide, these are the same things that I tell my kids. This is the way we've raised our kids, and maybe we'll talk about this a little bit more, not next week, but the week after that. Some guidelines for dating. These are things we need to keep in mind that are really helps us process and go through the dating stages in a godly manner, in a way that would be that Jesus would love for us to do. And so here are some things that we need to think about. The first one is friendship. That we should begin every relationship with an eye towards friendship. The most important thing we can do as we're thinking about dating somebody, we're looking at, is get to know them as a friend. Keep the physical out of the relationship and just focus on being friends. Man, when we start getting physical with somebody, it clouds our judgment. We don't see maybe all the baggage or areas that maybe need to be worked on. We don't really get to know them as well, who they are for a person, because the physical attraction is so strong. So when that enters into the relationship, friendship is hard to do. In fact, I mentioned this some years ago in a message, and I had a couple of the guys come up to me afterward. They'd been married for years, and they said, hey, this is exactly what happened to me. I started dating this girl. We went way too fast. We never got a chance to really become friends. He goes, that really hindered our marriage in the early days. So this becomes very important. You've got to build it on a friendship. Friendship is the foundation for our marriage. And if we haven't learned, do I really like this person? Or can we really be good friends? Is that going to be the glue that holds us together? If we skip that step, we're missing something that's very, very important. And that's why we keep the physical out of it, so we truly can become friends and get to know them as a person. Okay. Number two is faith. So faith is primary. Dating is secondary. I feel like sometimes we switch this, like faith is primary, and then, oh, wait, I like this person over here, and then dating becomes primary, and faith becomes secondary. And faith always needs to remain primary. And so it's not how do we fit, it's not how we fit our spiritual life into our dating life, but it's how do we fit our dating life into our spiritual life. Our spiritual life always remains the primary. And we've got to have this faith that is autonomous, that we own in a sense. And we want to make sure that person that we're thinking about dating and end up, if we end up dating, that they have a faith that is autonomous or self-reliant and not dependent upon your faith or like my faith. And here's what happens if you want to make sure of this, because you want to make sure this person's a Christian, not because you're a Christian, but because they really believe it for themselves, whether you're dating or not dating. And what happens many times, you start dating somebody, they kind of gravitate into Christianity, not because they're really sold out for Jesus or but because you do. And that doesn't make for a strong faith in them necessarily. And you want somebody that you're going to do life with, that they have a strong faith regardless of whether they're dating you or not. Because here's the thing, if they don't have a serious relationship with Jesus, that's a red flag, and that's somebody you probably don't want to date. And you want to know, do they read their Bible on their own, or do they just read the Bible with you because that's what you want to do? Do they pray on their own, or do they not? Do they really own the relationship with Jesus, or are they just a Christian kind of based, you know, just kind of riding on somebody else's coattails? Maybe it's mom and dad's coattails. Maybe it's the person they're dating, their coattails. But we want somebody who really has a faith for their own. Do they go to church because you go to church, or they go to church because they know it's the right thing to do? Are they visibly identified as a Christian? Do they have a care and concern for lost and hurting people? These are things you want to be able to look and be able to get a grasp on. Are they really following Jesus? And so faith is important, because here's the thing. Number one, you don't want to marry somebody that doesn't have a strong faith on their own. And number two, when you're married, sometimes you struggle with your faith. And if the other person isn't strong, then what's going to happen when you're weak? And see, at times in our marriage, maybe Stacy has been struggling or I struggled, but the other one was able to keep us strong when the other one was struggling. That's why you need somebody who has a vibrant faith on their own and doesn't just have a faith because you have a faith. So this becomes a very important part of the process and being able to say, hey, does this person really love Jesus? Are they just living it? Are they living it out on their own? Or are they just kind of, you know, culturally a Christian? And then we got friends and family. So friends and family. So here's the thing is, we don't want to kind of go AWOL on our friends and our family because now we have this new relationship. We want to bring the person that we want to date or are dating, bring them into our family and friends. And we want to watch and see, how do they interact with my family? How do they interact with my friends? How well do they get along? Do they communicate well? Are they able to navigate those waters? This is part of the process of learning who they are and how they deal with people in relationship. And if you go AWOL, never have that opportunity, then you're not going to know. The other thing is you can get some feedback from your family and friends. Man, what do you think about this person? Do we look like a right match? Do you think we'd be compatible? You know, think like things, this would be a possible future mate for me. And so there's lots of things in this context of family and friends that becomes so important. And also, I tell you what, family dating, group dating is just a great thing, man. It takes a lot of the pressure off, man. When you do things as a group, it just helps to build that friendship. It helps to keep the family and friends in that context and makes it a lot easier when you're just trying to live a pure and holy life at the same time. So there's so many advantages to just dating in this context of friends and family. All right, and then the last one here is the future. You want to keep your eyes focused on the future. That the primary goal of young people is to be prepared for the future, and we don't want to let dating throw us off course on that one. Okay, so as I get ready to just kind of put this in our minds as a process, go to my next slide. Let's talk about gears, shifting gears. Anybody know how to drive a stick shift here? Anybody drive stick? Yeah, we got no hands. Anybody learn to drive on a stick shift? We got some people learn to drive on a stick shift, right? Anybody still want to drive a stick shift? You still want to drive? You guys, we got a few that want to drive it. All the time or just once in a while? All the time? Wow, I'm back there, right. So when I was young, drove stick shift like all the time. My first, second, third car were all stick shift. Stacy in here, she always struggled to drive stick shift. Didn't really like her driving my car. It wasn't stick shift. So that's, I know. But you know, a stick shift was always fun when I was younger. As I got older, I got tired of shifting gears. I just wanted to put my foot on one, either gas or the brake. But it was always fun. You know, you're on an incline, you have people behind you, and it's tricky. You know, you've got to get the right amount of gas, let out the clutch at the right speed. And if you don't have enough gas, you're going to stall out right there and be really embarrassed because you're holding up the whole line of people behind you. Or you're going to give it too much gas, you're going to spin your wheels, it's going to squeal, and you're going to take off. So either way, those were the challenges of driving stick shift. So I want to give you an analogy that goes with shifting gears when it comes to dating. Okay? Now, this is not like the bases. Like, there's another analogy that I'm not going to, and that is the bases going to, you know, with dating. First base, second base, third base, grands, whatever, right. So when I say first gear, I'm not talking about first base. Okay? And second gear, I'm not talking about second base. This is a different analogy, so don't go there. Stay here with the gears. This has to do with speed in the process of dating, okay? So first gear we know is the gear you start off with, and it's very slow. You don't go that fast in first gear. So this is where dating starts, is you put it in first gear and you go slow. It's just getting started. This is where friendship is built. This is where the focus is. It's not about romance. It's not about physical connection. It's about friendship, and it's slow. It's slow at the beginning. You want to take it slow. This becomes very important. And again, it's all about friendship. It's all about developing this friendship, getting to know them, them getting to know you. All right. And we've seen people that have gone to first gear and then all of a sudden through all the gears and end up in fifth gear and way too fast. So this is about taking it slow. But as you build up speed and you feel like this relationship may go somewhere, you might want to shift into second gear, right? And we know in second gear, things speed up a little bit, right? You can go faster in second gear than you did first gear. But you're still trying not to go too fast because you don't want to get a speeding ticket. Are you guys with me? Right, okay. So I don't need to talk anymore about it. All right, so you're being careful about what activities you're doing. You're staying in the groups. You're getting to know maybe their family a little bit more, getting to know their friends a little bit more, trying to go deeper in knowing their character and who they are. Taylor, are you laughing at me over there? You're just laughing at me over there. I know. Okay, all right. So, you know, you're sticking with the guidelines, but you're in second gear and beginning to pick up speed. Still trusting the Lord, praying about this, not going too fast. Right, keeping the physical out of it. And you might ask your question. You might ask yourself some questions like this: is this person becoming more like Christ? That's important to consider when you're in the early stages of these gears. You don't ask this question when you're in fifth gear. You're doing this in first and second gear, okay? Maybe third gear. You're asking, does this person have a strong and growing character? These are things you want to think about. Does this person have the right kind of friends? Is this person responsible relationally, financially, emotionally, intellectually? So you're looking at character. You're maybe asking the question, is our attraction increasing? That's a good thing. That could be a good thing. And so maybe that's part of the signal to go to the next gear. Are we helping each other grow closer to Jesus? Or are we helping each other move further away from Jesus? These are things we need to be thinking about. Do people I respect think highly of this person? Do I believe that God's blessing is on this relationship? Are we growing in our understanding of one another? And do I like what I see? And if this keeps going, then you shift into third gear and you're picking up a little bit more speed. And at this point, you might bring out the M word. marriage, right? Marriage, right? Or the L word, love. You know, so you, again, taking it slow, getting into third gear here, where you go a little bit deeper in getting to know each other, and you're starting to think about the future and the possibilities together. And you're also looking, what kind of baggage does this person have? Right? We all have baggage. Are they able to deal with their baggage? And are they able to work through some of their issues? And how does that affect the relationship? So you're thinking all this through. You're praying this through. Maybe talking with mentors and pastors and friends and family about these things. And it's in this gear of moving into second and third gear that don't ignore the warning signs. If there's warning signs, you need to deal with them now and not ignore and think they will get better. That you deal with them now. Don't ignore them. Because if you think they might be a problem now, they will definitely be a problem later. I see that hand. Thank you for that. And so don't ignore the warning signs. Not all problems are deal breakers. Not all problems are deal breakers, but we need to know what the problems are. We need to know whether we can work through them or not. So let's not go blindly. The problem is when we move too fast, and we get involved too much physically, we don't really look at the warning signs. And we go further than we want to go. All right, then we get into fourth gear would be engagement. And then fifth gear would be marriage, which goes obviously faster and faster, and you're married. But if we could think about it in the gears in our dating relationship, how to take it slow at first, maybe keep building up some speed slowly and gradually as you prayerfully think this through and talk with family and friends and good counsel. Let me close with this verse this morning. Because no matter what relationship you're in or where you're at, we need to continue to trust God, whether we're single, whether we're looking, whether we're engaged, dating, married, or single again. No matter where we're at in life or where we're at in relationships, we need to trust God. That's part of the process of everyday life and the transitions of life. So let me read Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6. It lets me thinking for ourselves, in what area of my life do I need to trust God? Maybe it's with a relationship. Maybe it's with a situation, but he says here, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, for in all your ways submit to him and he will make your paths straight. So for each one of us here, where do we need to trust God this morning?